This is the best time in all of financial history to be alive. With 5% of the world's population, 5% of the world's landmass, the United States produces 30% of the world's gross national product and contains 50% of the world's wealth. The United States has created more millionaires, multimillionaires, billionaires, and multibillionaires in the last few decades than all the rest of the world put together throughout history. In 1900, there were 5,000 millionaires in the United States, most of them self-made. By the year 2000, there were 5 million millionaires in the United States, an increase of 1,000 times. In 2008, the number of millionaires in the U.S. increased to 9,600,000, an increase of 92% in 8 years, the largest expansion of personal wealth in the history of man on Earth. And if anything, even more millionaires are going to be created in the years ahead. The United States today has a $13 trillion economy that's growing by approximately $500 billion per year. The average family income in the U.S. is over $50,000 and is the highest in the world and continues to grow at 3 to 5% per annum. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in Paris, an international body, the United States is the most entrepreneurial country in the world. More than 2 million new businesses are formed each year in the U.S. More people are making more money in more different ways than ever before. More people will become financially independent, if not self-made millionaires, in the next few years than in the last 200 years put together. Your goal should be to become one of them. In this session, you will learn some of the most important principles of wealth creation. Now, I came from a poor family and struggled with money all my young life. I didn't graduate from high school, as I mentioned. After I left high school, I worked at laboring jobs and so on. I even worked as a galley boy on a freighter in the North Atlantic. In my early 20s, I began asking, why is it that some people are more successful than others? Perhaps the biggest breakthrough for me was the discovery of the self-concept, as I described earlier. I learned that you always perform on the outside based on the way you think about yourself on the inside. As you change your self-concept, your idea of yourself, your external performance and results change as well. In short, you become what you think about most of the time, so you must be very careful about what you think about, especially with regard to yourself. So what do self-made millionaires think about? Many thousands of self-made millionaires have been studied and interviewed. Most self-made millionaires seem to have certain qualities in common. Number one, they think long-term. They make efforts and sacrifices in the present in order to achieve financial independence 10 and 20 years into the future. They don't spend all their money and a little bit more besides, as most people do. Second, they practice the three keys to financial success: frugality, frugality, frugality in their financial lives during their prime earning years so that they can achieve financial independence as early as possible. Many people with average jobs coming from average families who practice frugality find themselves financially independent in their mid-40s or early 50s. Many people who make a fabulous living end up broke or nearly broke at the age of 60 or 65. In Texas, they say, big hat, no cattle. Makes a lot of money, but he's got no assets. A third quality of self-made millionaires is they develop the habit of enjoying the process of saving and accumulating rather than spending everything they make as they go along. They actually get pleasure from saving. They get pleasure from seeing their investments grow, as opposed to most people who get their pleasure from going out and throwing their money around. Now, the key measure of how well you are doing is your survival rate. This is the number of months and years that you could support your current lifestyle if you never worked again. Your goal should be to get your survival rate up to 20 years. This amount becomes your number. To determine your number, your ultimate financial goal, calculate how much you need to live on each month and then multiply that amount by 240. 240 is 20 years times 12 months. This then becomes your long-term financial goal throughout your lifetime. This is your target. Now, the secret of wealth creation has been the same throughout history. Add value. The fact is that everyone works on commission. Everyone is rewarded by receiving a percent of the value that they create with their work. The greater results that you get, the more value that you add, the greater will be your commission. Most people start with nothing at the beginning of their careers. Virtually all wealth in America is first generation. Almost all wealth begins with the sale of personal services, with what is called sweat equity. To achieve financial success, you must be continually seeking ways to add value to whatever it is you are doing. Resolve to always put in more than you take out, to add more value than you charge. Always do more than you're paid for. Always go the extra mile in your work. As Napoleon Hill once said, no one can ever stop you from putting in more than you're being paid for, from going the extra mile in everything you do, and it will put you on the side of the angels. Remember, there are never any traffic jams on the extra mile. How do you add a value in your work? Well, what you do is you use the law of three. First, make a list of everything you do over the course of a week or a month at your job. You may end up with 10 or 20 or 30 large and small things that you do. Second of all, review this list and ask yourself, if I could only do one thing all day long on this list, which one activity would contribute the greatest value to my business or my career? When I talk to salespeople, I have them ask, which one activity would help me the most to double my income? Third, once you've identified the one activity that contributes the most value, ask the question again. If I could only do two things all day long, what would be the second item? Fourth, once you've determined your top two tasks, ask the question once more. If I could only do three things all day long, what would be the third? In almost every case, your three key activities contribute 90% or more of all the value that you bring to your work. This is the law of three. The key to your success is for you to spend more and more time on those top three tasks and dedicate yourself to getting better and better at each of them. Now, let's look at where millionaires come from. 80% of self-made millionaires own their own businesses. They started with little or nothing. They built themselves up and achieved financial success as business owners. Interesting statistic. Fully 90% of businesses started by people with business experience eventually succeed because they know what they're doing. However, fully 90% of businesses started by people with no business experience ultimately fail, at least in the short term. Resolve to start your own business today, even if it's only a sole proprietorship. Remember, if you build it, they will come. When you start your own business, you will create a force field of energy that will attract into your life opportunities to activate this business. Sometimes I tell people in my audiences, take out your business card and stroke out whatever title is on your business card and write in the word president. And then stroke out whatever name of whatever company is on your business card and write in your own name, John Smith Enterprises. You are now the president of your own company. And what I said is that America is one of the easiest countries in the entire world to start a business. It takes an average of 26 hours and between $25 and $50 using the internet for you to actually be in business. So start a business so you own a business even before you know what you're going to do with your business. You can form a sole proprietorship simply by naming it after yourself. If you name it after yourself, you don't even have to register the name to protect it. You do not need permission from anyone to start a sole proprietorship in your own name. If you want to start an S corporation, you can usually do this on the internet at low cost. The advantage of a sole proprietorship or an S corporation is that everything you invest to start your business initially can be deducted against your current income as a legitimate business deduction in the current year. The IRS allows as much as $7,000 in deductions each year for a person who owns his or her business. As an employee with a paycheck, you don't get any of these deductions. Expenses that you normally pay for with after-tax dollars can be deducted as business expenses, such as travel, gasoline, rent, automobile, and meals. For example, the IRS allows you to deduct 58.5 cents per mile that you spend traveling. The average American drives between 12 and 25,000 miles per year. if you deducted 58.5 cents per mile traveling with the hope of meeting people and doing business, that would work out to anywhere from $8,000 to $15,000 a year that you can deduct from your overall income as a legitimate business expense. So see yourself as the president of your own personal services corporation from now on. Starting your own business is an interesting but a very simple thing. The key to starting a business is this. You simply find, create, acquire, or offer a product or service at a price that allows you to make a profit. Now, please understand that to start a business, you have to sell something. And many people hold back from starting a business because they're afraid of selling. Well, if you're afraid of selling, the only reason you're afraid of selling is because you don't know how. Just like you may be afraid of skydiving or juggling with knives. The only reason you're afraid is because you don't know how. So what you do is you don't allow this lack of a learnable skill to hold you back from fulfilling all your financial dreams. You simply get a course, read a book, take a seminar, and learn how to sell effectively. People who start businesses are always astonished at how much of their time they have to spend talking people into buying their product or service. Don't let this happen to you. Say, yes, in order for me to start a business, I have to find something to sell, something I can sell at a higher price than I paid for. That's been the starting point of every great fortune in history. All business, sales, and money-making skills are learnable. No one starts off with any of these skills. Let me repeat that. It's very important. Business skills, for instance, doing a business plan, doing market analysis, writing advertising, doing budgeting, determining costs and prices, promoting your business, and all these different things are all learnable skills. And everybody who starts off doesn't know these skills, and they learn them over time. So the faster you learn them, the faster you will be successful. Now, once you learn a business or sales skill, you can do it over and over again. Richard Branson, as you know, the serial entrepreneur from Britain who starts all these businesses, was once asked about this, and he said, businesses are pretty much the same. Once you understand the principles of starting and building a business, you can repeat it indefinitely in every other business. And he goes into music, and he goes into airlines, and he goes into hot air balloons, and he goes into resort development. I mean, he just takes the same principles, almost like a cookie-cutter recipe, and repeats them. And so can you. Now, each time you use a business or money-making skill, you get better and better at it. You make fewer mistakes, and therefore get better results. Remember I mentioned that people who start businesses succeed at a rate of 90% if they have previous business experience. It's because they know what they're doing. People who start a business with no business experience don't know what they're doing, and as a result, they go broke. So your job is to gobble up business information, learn everything you can, not only before you start your business, but throughout your business career. The key qualities required to start and build your own business, the major sources of wealth in our world today, are courage and skill. Now, everybody starts off with lack of courage and lack of skill. But the rule is that when you do the thing you fear, the courage comes afterward. When you perform in the skill area where you are weak, the skill and expertise come afterward. It's important to understand this because many people think, well, as soon as I have the confidence, I'll make the call. As soon as I feel really up and strong and courageous, I'll do it. No, that's not how it works. What you do is you do what you're afraid of, and the courage comes as a result. People say, well, as soon as I feel good about prospecting or making calls or calling on customers, well, then I'll get out there. No, what you do is you do it with the skill that you have, and additional skill comes afterwards. This is very important. It is the key to success. Now, a vital part of success in business is for you to think through what you sell and who you sell it to. Start off with the question that the owl asks in the dark woods. Who is your customer? Who is your customer? Why does or why would your customer buy your product? Why does he buy it from you? What does he consider value? Very important for you to understand who your customer is and why they buy. What specific benefits does your customer seek in buying your product or service? Is it clear in your advertising, promotion, presentation that your customer will receive these benefits? Remember, lack of clarity is the primary reason for sales failure. We say that fuzzy understanding is the greatest closing obstacle. The prospect is unclear how they will achieve a benefit by buying your product or service, so they say, well, let me think about it, which is another way of saying goodbye forever. So ask your question, how does your product or service improve your customer's life or work? Remember what customers buy, according to psychological studies, is how they feel they will be afterwards. In other words, if I buy your product or service, what's going to be the likely result? And they project forward into the future after the purchase, so they must be able to see in their minds a clear state of improvement, that they will be better off substantially buying your product or service and better off than any other use of the money. Here's a good question. Why doesn't your customer buy from you? What holds him or her back? Why doesn't he buy? Why does he say no if obviously your product or service is good for them? What is it in the customer's perception that's causing them to hesitate? If you can identify that and remove it, you can often double your sales, double your income, build a successful business, and become financially independent. Who are your competitors? Why does your customer buy from your competitor rather than from you? What is the customer's perception? What does the customer see in your competitor that makes your competitor's choice more attractive to yours? And how can you offset that? How can you minimize that? How can you replace it with something that you do better than your competitor does? What is your unique selling proposition? A unique selling proposition is something that only you offer that is a benefit or advantage to a customer that he or she is willing to pay money for. What is your unique selling proposition? What is your competitive advantage? What makes your product or service superior to that of your competitor? What is your area of excellence? What is it that your product or service offers that is better than anything else that's out there? These are the keys to business success. If you don't know what makes your product or service unique, if you don't know what makes you superior to your competitors, where you're excellent, you cannot even put together a basic sales presentation. You cannot write an ad. You cannot even identify the customer for what it is that you do well. So it's really, really important. Dedicate 80% of your time and effort once you start a business to selling, to what is called new customer acquisition. Businesses succeed because of one thing, high sales. Businesses fail because of one thing, low sales. If you don't have a lot of money, start small and test each step carefully. Grow slowly out of your cash flow and out of your profits. Remember, you don't have to sell your house and car and risk everything to start a business. You can start a small business with a small amount and then learn the critical skills necessary as you begin to grow. Keep accurate records of all your transactions. Know where your money comes from and where it goes. Many companies will start a business and they'll buy a product or service for 50 cents and they'll sell it for a dollar. And then they're surprised at the end of a month or two that they're losing money, but they're making 100% profit. But they don't take into consideration gasoline, rent, utilities, staffing costs, postage, telephone calls, their own salary, meals. They don't realize that sometimes you can go broke on a 100% markup. So you need to know where your money comes from and where it goes. And the way that you do that is you just make a list. You just make a list and you write down every single penny that you spend and every single penny that comes in. And that becomes the basis of your bookkeeping. Or the easiest of all is go online, get yourself a bookkeeping system online, and punch in every single number every single day in the proper places. Always concentrate in your business on net profits, not gross sales volume. In other words, it's not top line that matters, it's bottom line. Always focus on how much profit you will have at the end of the day and make sure that what you're doing justifies the amount of work and investment that you put into it. Always focus on positive cash flow. The most important number in any business is cash flow. We sometimes call this free cash flow, but it is the lifeblood of your business. It's the oxygen to the brain of your business. If your cash flow is cut off for any period of time, your business can collapse overnight. So always be hypersensitive to cash flow. The first rule for success in business and in money is don't lose money. There's a multi-billionaire who said his two rules for success are number one, don't lose money. Number two is if ever you're tempted, go back to rule number one, don't lose money. It's better you keep the money in the bank earning interest than that you lose it. Because when you lose money, you lose all the time it took you to accumulate that money in the first place. So it's not just money you're losing, it's time. It's weeks and months and even years out of your life. Now, let's talk about stock market investing because that's very popular. Here are some of the rules based on the exhaustive research. Number one is self-made millionaires do not make their money in the stock market. Very few people make money in the stock market. Point number two, 80% of stock market experts with many years of experience are unable to beat the stock market averages over time. You know that when they look at the thousands of mutual funds, which are managed by the most astute financial managers in the world, 80% of them don't beat the averages. In other words, if you took a page of the Wall Street Journal with all of the New York Stock Exchange stocks and you threw darts at it and you bought the stocks where the darts hit, you would do as well as 80% of the greatest financial minds working in the financial markets today. Now, point number three, self-made millionaires store their money in the stock market temporarily, usually in safe, stable, value stocks. These are big, solid stocks like Microsoft, Coca-Cola, and so on, that don't bounce up and down a lot, that sell really important products and services to large numbers of people. They spend an average of 6 minutes per day checking on their investments. If you ask the self-made millionaires, how is your portfolio doing? He has no idea, because he very seldom even looks at it. He just invests it carefully and gets back to his main job. Warren Buffett recently wrote, sitting on $27 billion in assets, that there is nothing worth buying in the stock market today. I mean, that's his attitude, and he is the preeminent stock market picker in history, if you like, became one of the world's richest men by buying and trading stocks, and in his estimation, today, there's nothing worth buying. Now, the reason is because trading stocks does not add value. Going in and out of the market, buying and selling, doesn't add any value. Trading stocks does not add value. The only way that you can acquire and achieve great wealth is by adding value in some way. So if you're going to invest in the stock market, the best of all investments is an index fund. These funds track the stock market. They outperform almost all mutual funds and have the lowest cost of acquisition and sales. What they do is they buy a little bit of all the stocks in a particular index. For instance, they'll buy a little bit of all the stocks in the Dow Jones, a little bit of all the stocks in the S&P, a little bit of all the stocks on a particular exchange, and your investment will simply track the averages. Here's another key to money. It's real estate investing. Now, the ownership of income-producing real estate is a major source of wealth in America, no question about it. And it is possible to buy real estate with no money down, but you require what is called a motivated buyer. A motivated buyer is someone who is anxious to sell and has no clear idea of what his property is worth. Sometimes a motivated buyer is someone who just went bankrupt and has to sell the house, just got a divorce and has to sell the house, just got transferred to another state and has to sell the house, just suffered a major loss somewhere else and has to sell the house. In other words, they're eager to get out of the house and they really don't know what it's worth. Real estate experts on the subject of no money down investing will tell you that you must look at 100 properties before you can find 10 on which you can make an offer. Of the 10, you may be able to purchase one property. It therefore requires several weeks or even months of hard work to find a home that you can buy for no money down. But even in buying foreclosures, you must be careful. Remember, there is no such thing as easy money. You must be very careful with every penny and be very concerned about not losing money. Even if you can buy a foreclosure or a home with no money down, you still have to pay bank fees, mortgage fees, points at closing, closing fees, legal fees, title fees, and a variety of other hidden expenses. All these have to be paid in cash. Once you own a house for no money down or take over a foreclosure, you have to pay all the upfront cash costs of upgrading, renovating, landscaping, repairs, and advertising to find a tenant. If you don't find a tenant immediately, you must pay the monthly operating and mortgage costs out of your own pocket until you do. Many homes, or even office buildings, that you'll buy at no money down will stay empty for 6 months, and you have to pay all of the expenses out of your pocket for cash. Now, one of the best methods to start in real estate is called buy 'em, fix 'em. This consists of finding a home that is run down, buying a home at a below market price, moving in or fixing up the house on your evenings and weekends, and then either renting it out or selling it and making a profit. The first time you buy and fix a house will take several months, even a year. The second time you do this will take less time, maybe 6 months. After 3 years of experiences of buying, fixing them up, and selling or renting them, you can be buying, fixing up, repairing, and reselling 4 to 6 homes per year, making a profit each time at little or no risk. I have met people who started off keeping their day jobs and just went from house to house. First house took a year, this couple told me. Second house took 6 months. Third house took 3 months. Fourth house took 2 months. Fifth house took 1 month. And by the end of a year, they were buying, fixing up, renting out or reselling a house every month and making about $20,000 to $30,000 per house net. They didn't try to make $1 million. They worked on the weekends. Eventually, they hired contractors who could do the work for them. They found bankers and financial institutions that would finance them. They had ads running continually to find tenants. And they were building a substantial estate just by simply buy and fix them while they kept their day jobs. Now, you add value to real estate by making it more attractive so that you can rent the property at a higher price, thereby increasing its market value, or you can sell it and make a profit. The key to success in real estate is for you to think long-term, the key quality of self-made millionaires. Never buy a piece of property with the idea that you're going to flip it quickly and make a quick profit. Always think about owning a piece of property for 5 or 10 years before you buy it in the first place. Remember, buying and flipping property is like playing musical chairs with real estate. When the music ends, somebody is left standing up without a chair. Today, you find thousands, millions of people who were playing musical chairs and they ended up with no chair. They ended up bankrupt with their financial lives in ruin. Don't let this happen to you. So one of the keys to success in real estate is to learn every detail about the property. Imagine when you buy a piece of property, you're actually buying stock in that neighborhood, just like you would buy stock of a company. So learn every detail about the property. Learn about the city. Learn about the neighborhood. Learn about the local economy. Learn about the local schools, shopping centers, and roads. Become intimately familiar with the property before you buy it. Do you know what really good real estate speculators do? They will walk through the property. They'll walk through the neighborhood. They'll walk around and they'll come at different times of the day, weekends, evenings, and so on. They'll listen for traffic noise. They'll look for traffic. I remember I bought a house once, and I bought it in the summertime, and it was my first house. And the house was well-priced, so I thought I was getting a good deal. And then the leaves fell off the trees, and all the sound buffering that the house had disappeared, and it turned out that there was a major freeway about a block and a half away, and you could hear the roar of trucks and cars and motorcycles 24 hours a day. You had to wear earplugs to sleep because of the noise. Forever after, whenever I bought a property, I'd research the neighborhood very carefully to make sure that there were no roadways or freeways that would drown the neighborhood in sound when the weather changed. Becoming financially independent is your long-term goal. The simplest way for you to become financially independent is to develop the habit of saving 10 to 20% of your income throughout your lifetime. If you're starting off in debt today, as most people are, begin by saving 1% of your income and living on the other 99%. Once you become comfortable living on 99%, increase your savings rate up to 2% of your income, then 3%, 5%, and eventually 10%. Within a year or so, you will be living quite comfortably on 80% to 90% of your income and then saving and investing the balance. If you do this throughout your working lifetime, you will become a millionaire. The reason this works, by the way, is that human beings are creatures of habit. You get into a habit of spending the amount of money that you're earning. If you pay yourself first, off the top, and save that money, you get into the habit of living on what you have left. And pretty soon, what seems to be a little difficult at the beginning becomes very comfortable. And then your financial estate begins to grow. Self-made millionaires develop the habit of living within their means. The key to financial success can be summarized in 5 words. Spend less than you earn. Spend less than you earn, and then invest the difference. Now, there are 5 don'ts for financial success. Number 1 is don't seek easy money or get led astray by get-rich-quick schemes and ideas. Number 2 is don't look for rewards without working. All people who achieve financial success work hard, hard, hard for a long period of time. Number three is, don't expect someone else to do it for you. You are responsible. Number four, don't trust to luck or hope for miracles. They never occur in financial matters. And number five, don't expect to be successful the first time. You will make hundreds of little mistakes on the way to developing the wisdom and experience that you need to get and keep the financial fortune that you desire. Now let's end with five do's for financial success. Number one, do study and understand every aspect of any investment you ever make for the rest of your life. If you don't understand it, don't put your money into it. Number two is do continually look for ways to add and increase value in some way in every situation. Number three, do be prepared to get rich slowly. All serious money is long-term, patient money. Number four, do be frugal with your money at all times. Be careful and thoughtful with how you invest it and spend it. Continually watch your money like a hawk. And number five is do resolve today to get your savings rate up to 10 to 20% of your income for the rest of your life, and then invest that money carefully. Don't lose money. Remember, all money-making skills are learnable. You can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself. Almost everyone who is wealthy today started off poor. By studying what other financially successful people have done in the past and doing the same things over and over, you will eventually get the same results. You will eventually achieve the financial independence you desire and hope for. Earlier in this program, I pointed out that there are more opportunities for more people to become millionaires in the years ahead than ever before. Now, the basic rules for becoming a millionaire have never changed. Number one, spend less than you earn and save or invest the balance. Interestingly enough, some years ago, I was doing a seminar and I was talking about financial success and achievement. And at the break, several well-dressed people were standing around me at the bottom of the stage. And this young guy came pushing through the crowd. And he was obviously not all together. He was dressed poorly, had kind of crummy clothes on. And as soon as he began to speak, it was clear that he had a mental problem. And he said, "Mr. Tracy, Mr. Tracy." And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Mr. Tracy, can I be a success too?" And I didn't know what to say to this person. And then he went on to speak. He said, "Mr. Tracy, I live in a group home," which tells you exactly what his life situation was like. He said, "We repair furniture," which told you what his level of competence was. He said, "Mr. Tracy," he said, "every month I save $100. If I do that, will I be a success?" And as it happened, the day before, I'd been reading compound interest tables, which I don't read that often, and I found that if you saved $100 a month and you invested it in a good mutual fund that increased at 10% per annum, and you did that from age 20 to age 65, you'd be worth $1,118,000. That young man, with no advantages going for him at all, had been given some good advice by someone, and if he just saved $100 a month from his earnings, he would end up one of the richest people in society. He'd end up richer than doctors, lawyers, architects, engineers, and business people who did not save as much as he did. As Albert Einstein said, compound interest is the most powerful force in the universe, and if you just invest on a regular basis, $100 a month will make you rich. Think what $200 or $300 or $500 a month would do. So pay yourself first. Spend less than you earn and pay yourself first. Save 10% off the top of every paycheck and live on the rest. If you can't, as we said earlier, start with 1% and live on 99% until you develop the habit and it becomes easy and automatic for you to live on less than you earn. Now here's a great rule that I learned from Lloyd Conant, the founder of Nightingale Conant. He said, "Brian, remember this. It's not how much you earn, but how much you keep that counts." And he said this when I was a young man. I was just starting off. He said, "Brian, you have the potential ability to earn a lot of money in life, but never forget, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep." So how do you keep your money? Well, simple, delay, defer, procrastinate on every expenditure. If you're thinking about buying a house, buying a car, buying a boat, taking a trip, give yourself 30 days. Never be rushed into a big expenditure, even if it's a stereo set or something else. The most amazing thing happens if you think about a big expenditure for a while, your desire to buy it will kind of drift away, and you'll think, you know, I might be better off saving that money, investing it, putting it into something that grows, rather than spending it at this time. Where does this mindset come from? This is the mindset of self-made millionaires. Never buy new when you can buy used. Interesting, in the studies of self-made millionaires, they never buy new cars. Why is that? Because if you buy a new car, you lose 30% of the value of the car when you drive it off the lot by depreciation. So what self-made millionaires do is they buy good cars that are 2 or 3 years old, all the depreciation is out of them, and they're still under warranty. And then they'll buy a car and drive it for 10 years until it falls apart. And they'll take all the money that people use to keep buying new cars. Instead, they'll take that money, they'll buy property. They'll invest it carefully in their business. They'll put it somewhere where it grows. If you were just to buy a new car every 10 years and drive it till the wheels fell off and take all that extra money and invest it carefully, that would give you a quantum leap toward financial independence. The rule is count your pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. They did a study that just came out recently, and it said that people who track their expenditures save 50% more than people who don't. And what does that mean? It means that you take a little spiral notebook in your pocket, and every time you spend something, you write it down. What psychologists have found is that when you write it down, it brings it to your level of awareness, and you're much more attentive to it. So you buy a double frappe non-fat cappuccino latte at Starbucks, and it's $4.35, and you write it down. You buy a newspaper or a Coke, you write it down. You go out for lunch, you write it down. As you write it down and you track your numbers, you start to automatically spend less. People who do this for 1 month find themselves spending 50% less because many of the expenditures we make are mindless. We don't even think about them. We just buy it, you know, and we don't even think about it. Now, here's number three. All wealth comes from adding value in some way, as we said earlier. You add value by doing more important things. You find the things that are most important to your customers and do those things for them. You add value by doing things faster, doing things cheaper, doing things better. This is the key to success in business. Faster, cheaper, better. Faster, cheaper, better. Every single day, look for a way to serve your customers faster, cheaper, better. You add value by reducing costs, by increasing convenience and quality. You add value by giving people more of what they want and need at prices they are willing and able to pay. Remember the famous Zig Ziglar quote, "You can get everything you want in life if you just help other people get the things that they want." And that's the key to becoming wealthy. Now, where do self-made millionaires come from in America? Number one is self-owned businesses. Entrepreneurs make up 74% of self-made millionaires. Look at your great entrepreneurs. Look at Bill Gates, started his own business. Paul Allen, his business partner. Warren Buffett, Larry Ellison, Michael Dell, Sam Walton, all started with nothing and started their own business with a little bit of money and a lot of sweat equity. The second source of self-made millionaires, 10%, is well-paid executives. People who work for large companies, are well-paid, get stock options, hold on to the money, make up about 10%. The third category of self-made millionaires is professionals. Doctors, lawyers, architects, engineers, professionals of all kinds who are successful in their practices and who accumulate the money. Now, next group, 5% of self-made millionaires are salespeople. They're salespeople who maybe worked for the same company or other companies, but they sold all their lives, they made a lot of money, and they put the money away and held on to it. And I always ask people, I say, now, what's the most important skill for entrepreneurship? And they'll say, sales. I say, yes. So if you combined entrepreneurs and salespeople, 74% plus 5%, that's 79% of all your chances and hopes of becoming financially independent reside in your ability to start a business and sell something. And everything else is everything else. Now, the last 1% is all other sources. Writers, movie stars, inventors, all kinds of things, lottery winners, but all others embrace 1%. But if you read the newspapers and the magazine, you think that this 1% was the primary source of wealth in America. No. People who accidentally stumble into money or win a lottery or become rock stars is very rare. So all of your potential for success, or almost all of it, is your ability to start a business and to sell a product or service. The largest source of self-made millionaires, entrepreneurs, and salespeople. Now, what are the most important qualities of self-made millionaires? Number one is honesty. Earl Nightingale used to say that if honesty did not exist, it would have to be invented as the surest way to getting rich. And the reason for that is very simple, that all of business is based on trust. Nobody can succeed in business unless everybody trusts them. Their customers have to trust them when they sell their products or services. Their staff has to trust them. The bank has to trust them. Their suppliers have to trust them. So you find that business people, in the main, are some of the most honest people you'll ever meet. And when a business person is dishonest, it gets into the newspapers. But there's 26 million businesses in America, and it's only a tiny, tiny fraction of 1% of those are actually dishonest. Because if you are dishonest in business, you're finished. You have to move to another country. You can never start again because your integrity has been compromised. The second quality of self-made millionaires is self-discipline. Napoleon Hill, after decades of research, concluded that self-discipline is the master key to riches. The discipline to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. And we have a whole session on this coming up. But discipline is the key. Get yourself up in the morning. Get yourself working. Get yourself concentrating on high-priority tasks. Get yourself paying the price of success in advance. Now, the third quality of self-made millionaires is getting along well with people. Self-made millionaires have to please an awful lot of people to be successful, so the number one quality they have is likability. They're likable people. People like them and are willing to buy from them. People like them and are willing to work with them and for them. People like them and are willing to give them credit. People like them and are willing to lend them money. So likability, taking the time to be nice to people, is really important. Here's the fourth quality of most self-made millionaires. They have a supportive spouse. You think, well, what does that mean? Well, when you have a supportive spouse, you're not out dating. You're not spending half of your life going out on dates with other people. When you have a supportive spouse who stands behind you, it saves an enormous amount of energy. It means that all that energy that you would spend on a problem marriage or relationship or finding a person, all that energy is available to you to focus into your business. So you find that behind almost every self-made millionaire or billionaire, there is a woman who supports him all the time. And behind every self-made female millionaire or multimillionaire, there's a strong man as well. So having a supportive spouse is really helpful. The fifth quality of self-made millionaires is they are hard workers. In interviews with tens of thousands of them, they were asked, how did you manage to accumulate $1 million in one lifetime? 85% of them said the same thing. They said, well, you know, I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer at school. I didn't get good grades. I didn't go to college. If I went to college, I didn't do particularly well. He said, a lot of people had more going for them than me, but I was willing to work harder than they were. They weren't willing to work as hard as I was. I was at a conference recently, and the president of this large national corporation got up and told a little motivational story, but it was about a friend of his who had won 7 Ironman triathlons in Hawaii in a row. Seven triathlons. And this is the toughest triathlon in the world. You have to run 26.4 miles, swim 3.5 miles, and ride a bicycle 125 miles. He'd won 7 in a row. And he asked him, how is it you could run and win that many triathlons against the greatest competition in the world? He said, well, there's a lot of them have better physical structure than me. He said, but the reason I win is because they're not willing to take the pain that I'm willing to take. They're not willing to take the pain. And I thought about that. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that the reason for success? Successful people are willing to take the pain, the long nights, the long weekends, the worry, the stress, the difficulty. They're willing to take more pain. And I think that's the key to success in life, is the top people are willing to take the pain, whatever it is, and keep on keeping on. Well, the sixth quality of self-made millionaires is that they do what they love to do. And most self-made millionaires will tell you, I never worked a day in my life. I just do what I love to do and I get paid well for it. So one of the most important things you do as you experiment and try different things is to look for something you really enjoy. Look for a product that you love, that you use, that you feel is really good, that you are excited about telling people about. Look for customers you love to sell to. Look for markets you love to work in so that when you go to work, you're just happy all the time. and you'll find it's essential for your success to do something that you love. Offer a product you love. Sell to people that you really care about. And if that doesn't fit the description now, try something else. It doesn't mean that you're the wrong person. It just means you may be in the wrong place at this time. My good friend Robert Kiyosaki is famous for his rich dad, poor dad philosophy, and he's got some wonderful insights, and I just want to give them to you. He said there's four categories of people in rich dad, poor dad. The first category is employees. They work for a salary. They don't get any tax benefits aside from what comes off their paycheck, and it's very hard for a person working for a salary to achieve financial independence. As my friend Mark Victor Hansen says, they have a job, and the word job, J-O-B, stands for just over broke. The second category of people in the rich dad, poor dad philosophy is the self-employed. These are people who are independent contractors. They work on commissions, they work on income, they work on bonuses, but they're lone wolves, if you like. The third category are entrepreneurs. Now, these are lone wolves as well, but they have people working for them who are doing specialized tasks, so they get more done with a group of people than they would as an individual. And the fourth group of people are investors. And investors are people who invest their money to create income sources, or what we call passive income. They invest in a company or a business that is run by others that throws off steady profits. They invest in oil wells. They invest in commercial or residential real estate that yields rents and so on. And the definition of wealth is this. It is income from other sources. I have a good friend who came over from Lebanon many, many years ago, unable to speak English, and is now worth an enormous amount of money. He's very successful. And he one day asked me many years ago, "Brian," he said, "how much money do you make?" And I said, "Well, I'm doing pretty well." He said, "I would guess, based on my knowledge of your business, you're making about this amount of money." And he was pretty accurate. He said, "How many wealth sources do you have aside from your work?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, if you stopped working, how much money would you have?" I said, "Well, if I stopped working, it would all stop, like a car coming to a halt at the side of the road when it runs out of gas." He said, "Then you're not wealthy at all. You're making a lot of money, but you're not wealthy. You're only wealthy when you have money coming in, whether you work or not." And that was like a slap in the face with a wet fish. I changed my entire financial life. I began thinking more seriously about developing assets, paying down assets, investing, and so on, because wealth is money in the mailbox. Wealth is money that comes in whether you work or not. So your goal in the rich dad, poor dad philosophy is to move from employee by saving your money to self-employed by working on commission to entrepreneur, having people work for you, to being an investor where your money works for you and the money comes in whether you work or not. Now, the rule in life is this, is when you start off with nothing. Tradition in American society is most people start off with nothing and then see what happens. It's like, you know, lining up for a big marathon and everybody starts off running. Some people will win. Some people will stay back in the pack. Some people will come in after everybody's gone home. And your job, you have lots of time but no money. And over the course of your working lifetime, your goal is to change that ratio so that you have less time as you get older, but you have more money. And you finally cross where your money is earning more than you are. And at that point, you can resign and work full-time managing your money. So that's your goal. And early in life, you trade time for money. Later in life, you trade money for time. Now, here are some keys for personal financial planning. The first is called targeting. Targeting means that you set clear financial goals for your life. You determine your annual income goal. This year, next year, the year after, and you write it down. You determine your monthly savings goal. How much are you going to save each month? Now, the very act of writing these numbers down makes it much more likely that you will actually achieve them. If you have no idea about an annual income goal, then see what you earn at the end of the year when you get your W-2 forms. If you have no idea of a monthly savings goal, then you'll have a natural tendency to spend the money. Then you work out your net worth. How much do you want to be worth each month and each year? Start off with, how much are you worth today? Go through your entire financial life and make a list. Imagine that you had to sell all your assets and move to another country. You had to have a fire sale, a swap sale, a garage sale. How much would you have if you had to sell everything? The reason I say this is some people say, "Well, I've got $100,000 worth of furniture." Well, if you had to sell your furniture, how much could you get for it? And the answer is 10 cents on the dollar. If you had to sell an awful lot of your personal possessions, you'd be lucky to get 10 or 20 cents on the dollar. So be honest, how much are you really worth today, and what is your goal for retirement? Now what you have is down in the left-hand corner of the page, you have where you are today, and up at the right-hand corner of the page, you have your goal for retirement, and you draw a line between the two. And that tells you how far you have to go to accumulate 20 times your annual costs, as we talked about earlier. So that's number one, targeting. Have clear targets. You can't hit a target that you can't see. Number two is taking stock. Analyze your current situation. How much are you worth today exactly? How much do you owe exactly? And what is your current net worth? What are you worth today if you had to sell everything? The third key is trimming, reducing your expenses. Carefully calculate every expense and evaluate it before you make it. Before you make an expense, write it down, think about it, go onto the internet, talk about it with other people. Don't spend impetuously. Delay and procrastinate on buying large items, as we said earlier. Examine your biggest monthly expenses and look for ways to reduce, cut back, and eliminate them. Here is an interesting point. People buy or rent the biggest house or home that they can afford. Warren Buffett, worth $62 billion today, who can count, lives in the same house he started off in 30 years ago, drives the same car he drove 10 years ago. Sam Walton, before he died, was driving a pickup truck he'd been driving for 10 years. Now, this attitude toward money spilled over into everything that they did or that they do because they constantly looked for ways to reduce expenditures. And you need to do the same thing as well. And the fourth part is make yourself more valuable. Make yourself more valuable. Concentrate on your hourly rate. What is your hourly rate today? And the way you get your hourly rate is you take your annual salary, your annual income, and divide it by 2,000. And that gives you your annual rate. For example, if today you are earning $50,000 a year, your annual rate divided by 2,000 is $25 an hour. Then you decide to double your income. That means you double your hourly rate up to $50 an hour. The question is, what can you do to increase your value so that somebody will willingly pay you $50 an hour? And that takes us back to the law of three. What are the three things that you do that contribute the most value, and how can you get better and better in those three things? Apply the 80-20 rule to your work. What are the 20% of things that you do that contribute the greatest value, and how could you do more of those all day long? And finally, in terms of training, be prepared to change jobs. I had a young guy come up to me at a seminar, I'd say he was 25, and he said, you know, I want to improve my life, but I am a plumber, and I've spent several years getting my journeyman ticket as a plumber. I work for a plumbing company, but all the guys in this company that make money are the salespeople. They sell plumbing supplies to contractors. I said, well, then why don't you become a salesman? He said, well, you give up my training? I said, look, forget about your training. The most important responsibility you have is to earn the very most you possibly can. You know lots about plumbing. You have a lot in common with the people you're talking to. He said, I never thought about that, but I don't know how to sell. You can sell by listening to audio programs and reading books and going to courses. He said, by gum, I will. Well, about 2 years later, he came up to me. He said, you remember me? I said, no, I don't remember you. He said, I was a plumber and you told me to change jobs. And then I recalled. I said, yes. He said, I did. He said, I am making triple what I was earning as a full-time plumber. He said, I never made so much money in my life. He said, I've got a better house for my kids. I've got a better car. I have a better life. We take better vacations. He said, thank you very much for your advice. So I say over and over again, there are some jobs that have a ceiling. And sometimes you've hit the ceiling. And no matter how hard you work or how good you are, the company won't pay you anymore. So it's time to find a better job. And now you're prepared for it. Now you're a good catch. Now you're the kind of person that people will want to hire. Now, in starting your own business, there are several things that you need. The first, number one, is competence. You must be very good at what you do. You find that people only buy from people who they feel can serve them better than anyone else. And you must take it as a personal affront if somebody says that your competitor's products or services are better than yours. So concentrate on joining the top 10%. Concentrate on becoming excellent at what you do. The second key to starting your own business is customers. Your first job is to get a customer. Your second job is to get a customer. Your third job is to get a customer. Your job is to get customers all day long and never take your eye off the customer ball. Customers are the key to business success. And you'll find over and over again, as I said before, successful companies have high sales. Unsuccessful companies have low sales. And all else is commentary. Now, the third C, competence, customers is cash flow. Cash flow is the life of the business. And what successful business people do is they think about their cash flow all the time. In my business, I know exactly to the penny how much comes in and out of my business every single day. I have a complete report on where all the money is every single day. I have a complete report of every sale and every dollar from every sale, on every expense and every bill, every single day. I keep eyes on the cash flow like a doctor would keep their hands on the pulse of a critical ill patient. And it's very important that you do that. Jim Rohn said this long ago. He says, casualness brings casualties. Casualness with regard to money brings casualties. Now, study and learn every detail of the business. Before you get into the business, study and learn. One of the things I encourage people to do, if you're thinking of getting into a business, is go and work in that business for a day or two. Work on the weekends. Work in the evenings. Work for free. Say, you know, I'd like to learn about the business. Can I work for free? People won't turn you down. They'll say, sure, come on in. And you say, why do you do this? And why do we do that? And how does this work? Many people have tried out a business like that. And after a few hours or a few days, they say, this is not the business for me. Or they say, I like this business. I think I can do this business well. So learn every detail of the business. Subscribe to the publications in your business and read them. Go to the conferences and trade shows in your business and attend all the talks given by the best people. I have a friend who came over from England as an immigrant, and he sold advertising space to get by for a small publication, and the publication went broke, and he went to work for another publication and went broke, and he said, you know, I could publish a magazine. And so he decided he'd publish a magazine. He looked around, and people had asked him, why isn't there a magazine on sports in this state, sports fishing and things like that? He said, well, he'll start a magazine on sports and hunting. So he started this little magazine, and he had to sell advertising. So he went out and he began selling advertising. That was his skill. And he had people write up the stories while he sold the advertising. And about a year into this, he's just getting by, making a little bit of money and so on. He went to a conference in New York on the other side of the country. And it was a conference for magazine publishers, the international magazine publishers of the world. And he was just this little guy with this little publication, and he was just living, working out of his house and just getting by. And he said he took a lecture from one of the speakers who was an accountant talking about accounting for small publications. So he sat on this lecture. He said there were maybe 12 or 15 people there, a very nice accountant. And the accountant said, when you take your statement of accounts and you have your sales at the top, and then you have all of your expenses and you deduct those, what is this line called at the bottom of the page? And everybody said, that's your bottom line. And he said, and what does that represent? He said, that represents your profits or losses. He said, yes. He said, this is how most people do it. So how you are going to do it is differently. I want you to flip it over, and I want you to make your bottom line your top line. And what you do is you write the profits that you intend to make each month across the top. And then below that, the sales that you will have to make to generate those profits, and then the costs that you'll have to control to generate the profits. He said, if you do that, you start with your profits rather than ending up with your profits if you're lucky. He said he walked out of that lecture and he never looked back. Today, he owns 29 publications. He's a multimillionaire, one of the most respected people in the country, and he's never lost money in a single month in any publication, which is unheard of in publicity or publications or magazines because of that one lecture that he attended at that one conference from that one accountant who had the one idea. Now, the reason I tell you this story, because I could tell you stories like this all day long, is that you never know where the idea is going to come from. So you have to expose yourself to a lot of good ideas. So you've got to go where the ideas are. As we say, if you want to catch fish, fish where the fish are. If you want to learn how to run your business well, go to where other people in your field are talking about how to run your business well. Read, listen, learn, talk, ask for advice. Now, start small and expand out of your profits. Whenever somebody says, well, I can't get a bank loan to start a business, of course you can't. Banks do not lend money to business startups. Venture capitalists do not lend money to business startups. Nobody gives money to business startups. 99% of all new businesses are funded by what is called love money. Love money is your own money because you love your idea, and money from your friends and relatives because they love you. 99%. So therefore, start small with a little money and sell something and make a profit. And then do it again. Buy, sell it at a profit, and then repeat the process. A great way to start business, and millions of people have done this and become wealthy, is to start in network marketing. Now, network marketing offers wonderful products and services, health products, beauty products, home care products, and so on, that are usually very high quality. And what the company does, instead of selling them through retail outlets, which have to be supplied by wholesale outlets, which have to be supplied by jobbers, they take all the money that they would normally pay in commissions and markups, and they just give it to the network marketing chain. So they can pay as much as 40, 50, 60% of the total retail price. They'll pay it back to the people who sell it, one person at a time. Network marketing is now a $104 billion business worldwide and growing like a brush fire. So network marketing, you can start with a few hundred dollars and you can grow your business out of your own results, out of your own sweat equity. So that's a great place to start. The critical thing about network marketing is to sell something that you like, that you believe in, that you use yourself and benefit from, and that you feel that other people would enjoy and benefit from as well. If you can do that, you'll be a great salesman for your product or saleswoman. Now, another thing you can do is start in someone else's business and learn the ropes. Interesting, to get a franchise for Burger King, you have to work for 400 hours in a Burger King. You have to work at every single part of the business after you've applied for the franchise until you are so immersed in hamburgerology, they call it, that you say, yes, this is the business I want to be in. An enormous number of people who say, I want a Burger King franchise, bail after they've worked in an outlet for a time because they realize it wasn't right for them. The best time to find out that a business deal is wrong for you is before you get into it. Now, once you get started, use brains and energy rather than capital and investment to get going. Use creativity, use intelligence, use hard work. Use the qualities of character and personality you have rather than investing money when you possibly can. A couple of years ago, I was giving a talk to 1,000 potential entrepreneurs, and I stopped by the bookstore on the way to the talk, and in the bookstore, I found a book called 1001 Businesses You Can Start for Less Than $100. 1001. And it was page after page after page. So when people say to me, oh, I don't have enough money to start a business, well, you can check on Amazon or go to a bookstore. There's over 1,000 businesses you can start for less than $100 and then just grow out of your own efforts. The key to success in every business is sales ability, and sales ability is learnable. You can have an average company with an average product, and you can have an average background, but if you're a great salesperson, you're going to be rich. And you could have the best product and best market and best demand, but if you're not skilled in sales, you'll worry about money all your life. Create a business plan before you start. A business plan asks you a whole series of questions about your product, your customers, your markets, your financing, your advertising, promotion, production, service, standards, accounting, and everything. By the way, they're on the internet. You can just go on, get a business plan, and just fill in the blanks. Forces you to ask the critical questions that will save your business. Many people, when they put together a business plan, realize, hey, I can't get there from here. They realize that what I thought was a great business idea, once I've answered these questions, is not a good idea at all. There are not enough customers, and there are not enough customers who will pay the price I have to charge, and there are not enough customers that I can get to switch from what they're currently using. And a business plan helps you think these things through before it's too late. Once you start, focus 80% of your time on sales and marketing. Forget about accounting. Forget about bookkeeping. Forget about packing boxes. Forget about loading trucks. Spend 80% of your time hammering away at the market. This is more important than anything else. Practice frugality in all things. You'll find that successful business people are very cheap. Unsuccessful business people throw their money around. During the dot-com, dot-bomb explosion in Silicon Valley, these people were getting enormous amounts of venture capital funding before they even had a company going, and then they were blowing the money on incredible things. I read about one business. I actually met these people before they did it. I said, I couldn't believe what you're doing. They put together an internet, a dot-com company, and they decided they would raise capital by having an extravaganza in Las Vegas, and they would invite venture capitalists from all over the country. They spent $13 million on a one-night extravaganza, and they only had $14 million to start with, and they bankrupted the company, and the owner finally went to jail for embezzlement. I mean, it was incredible because they just threw the money around. So it's really important that you're really tight. Get used furniture. use secondhand offices, get used equipment, buy things very carefully, buy them only when you need them, buy them only in the supply that you require right now. One of the rules is act as though your business was on the verge of bankruptcy all the time, and look for ways to keep your costs low and tight. And finally, learn from every mistake and experience. When you start off, you'll find that all business is trial and error, trial and error. You'll make an enormous number of mistakes when you start a new business, and that's to be expected. But what you do is stop after every experience and say, what did we learn? What did we learn from this? What have we learned? What is this telling us that will help us to be better and smarter next time? And when you talk about the lessons, everybody will be positive. When you talk about the lessons, everybody's dimmer switch goes on full. When you talk about the lessons, people become more creative. One of the things I encourage people to do, as I said earlier, is use the two magic questions. What did we do right in this situation? And what would we do differently next time? What did we do right? What would we do differently? Okay, as we wrap up, let's talk about borrowing from the bank. Everybody talks about borrowing from the bank, borrowing from the bank. Well, there's some very interesting points about borrowing from the bank. The first rule is that banks survive and thrive by making good loans to customers who will pay them back promptly. Please understand this. When you talk to a banker, the banker does not see you as a person. The banker sees you as a source of revenues or profits for the bank. The bank lends you the money at a higher rate than they pay. The success or failure, the job or loss of job of the person across the counter is determined by whether or not they make good loans. If they make good loans, they get promoted. If they make bad loans, they get fired and blackballed from the banking industry. So when the person's looking at you, they are very cautious. Bankers, as you can imagine, are not high-risk people. In fact, banks are not in the business of taking risks. So banks look for five things. And this was told to me by a banker, by the way. He said, this is how we evaluate a loan. This is after we had gone through a lot of interesting times. He said, first of all, we look for your credit rating. And it's interesting because they can turn to their computer, put in your name, and you go bip, and they'll get your credit rating from three scoring companies in 2 seconds. And they can print it out. And your credit rating tells them, based on bank regulations, how much they can lend you or not, and how much they have to charge you for the loan. And sometimes it can be quite high. So that's why your credit rating is personal. And one of the things I tell people, throughout your lifetime, be fastidious about your credit rating, because it's the starting point of every cent that you borrow for the rest of your life. The second thing that banks look for is collateral. They look for other assets. I went to the bank once. I wanted to borrow money for my company. He says, what else you got? I said, what do you mean, what else? My company. And he said, no, we don't look at your company as an asset, because if your company was not successful, it would have no value. So have you got a house? Have you got a car? Have you got any investments in property and so on? And they wanted a list of every single asset that I had before they could lend me any money. They want collateral well in excess of the amount that you are asking to borrow for your business. In fact, this banker told me, he said, when someone comes to us for the first time, we want $5 of collateral for every dollar we lend, just in case things go wrong. The third C is cash flow. They want to know all the money that you have coming in to your company and all other sources of cash flow that can be used to service the debt. They aren't just concerned about your company. They want to know how much your wife makes and how much you have coming in from a policy or from an investment or bond or something else. They want every penny on the table. The fourth thing to look for is commitment. How much of your own money have you invested? How much hurting money do you have on the table? Because if you haven't put in all your own money, like in Texas Hold'em, all in, they'll be reluctant to lend you any of theirs. And the last thing they look for is your character, your reputation. Do you have a good reputation? Are you known in the community as a person who pays their debts? And very often, the size of your character will overwhelm all the others. If people know that no matter what happens, you always pay your debts, people will be much more willing to lend you money. Visit several banks, if necessary, to find a banker who will work for you. Just like when you decide to get married, you make sure that you've got good chemistry. When you decide to work with a bank, make sure that you get along really well with the banker. You have a really good feeling about this banker. And you may have to go out on several dates before you find the right banker. And then keep your banker informed of any changes. If there's ever a time where you cannot pay your bills, call the banker in advance. Let the banker know. Invest a lot of time and effort to build the relationship and then make sure the relationship stays solid. Here's the rule. Bankers hate surprises. They hate to find out that you cannot make your monthly payments of interest or principal. They need to know well in advance. I got into serious trouble some years ago, and then I found that a bank loan is always current as long as the interest is paid. Now, I was committed to paying principal and interest every month, so I went to the banker. I said, look, I've got a bit of a shortfall here, but I will maintain the interest payments. He said, that's okay. We understand that. Banks understand that companies have problems, and I always kept my interest current, and I always kept my credit rating above 800. So it's a small thing if you run into trouble and you can't make principal and interest, offer to make interest. Now, how do you protect your assets? Well, the rule is, if you have money, you're going to get sued. There are thousands of lawyers who make their money trolling. They look for anybody anywhere who has money that you can sue them for any reason. And if you get sued, by the way, even the most ridiculous lawsuit, you have to defend against it. You can't say, well, I'm just going to ignore it. No, if you get sued, you have to get your own lawyer and you have to fight it. So be aware of the fact that you're going to get sued. The best piece of advice I've learned from the experts in asset protection is to form a family limited partnership. It's called a FLIP. And you use this to act as a firewall around your assets. It's like a brick wall around your assets, and you throw all of your assets over the wall so that they are protected inside. You transfer all your assets, your home, your car, your business, everything into the family limited partnership, which is owned by you and the members of your family. You have your life insurance policy owned by a separate life insurance trust, so it's untouchable. You draw up a will that allocates your estate clearly, and you update it annually. Don't leave anything to chance with regard to a will. To protect your assets, you insure sufficiently. Make sure that you have fire, theft, liability, flood, health. Make sure that you have insurance for anything that you can't write a check to cover. Many people will actually lose everything because they insured improperly. And finally, number 7, use a good lawyer to draw up proper contracts, trusts, wills, and business agreements. I got into a legal problem some years ago, which led to a lawsuit, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars and dragged on for 2 or 3 years. And they're terrible things, by the way. And I went to a lawyer and I showed him the contract that was being sued on. And he said, Brian, who drew up this contract? I said, I did. He said, Brian, don't be so cheap next time. Spend a few $100s or a few thousand. Have a lawyer go over it because they know where all the bodies are buried. They know the little subclauses that can trip you up and make you vulnerable to a lawsuit. He said, Brian, don't ever be cheap like this again. And I never was. And boy, does it make a difference. Pay a few dollars for a lawyer to protect you. Well, here's the key qualities of self-made millionaires. Number 1 is future orientation. Self-made millionaires think 10 to 20 years ahead, and they make all their plans and activities fit a pattern consistent with where they want to be 10 and 20 years from now. Second quality is goal orientation. Make detailed, written goals and plans for each part of your financial life, and think about your goals all the time. The third quality of self-made millionaires is result orientation. Focus on those areas where the most valuable results are possible. And finally, action orientation. Get busy, get going, develop a sense of urgency. Self-made millionaires are in continuous motion. They move quickly, they get feedback and they self-correct. They make a mistake and they try something else. They never stop moving until they achieve their financial goals, and neither must you.